And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here!
Good morning. Good morning. Good morning. Good morning. Oh, yeah. It was a Thanksgiving. You know, it was a family thing. You know, we had plenty of Thanksgivingizing to do. Well, this is what we're going to do today. We'll just kind of go over some of the news, I guess. Maybe I can drag Donna over here. You going to be able to come over and say yo, what's up sometime today? Yep, Donna. You getting some Donna? Yay! Those on video. We're just running some of the pictures, you know, of our Thanksgiving and, you know, a bunch of the grandkids and them just playing with babies and doing and stuff. And, you know, we had a good, you know, it was a good gathering, you know, all our kids, cousins and sisters and friends and so on. And, things going on. The, as like, you know, I don't want to do bad news. You know, there's always somebody you know that something's happening and operation or sickness or illness or, you know, it's just, I just prefer not. You know, it's not always everything goes well for everybody. But, you know, on the whole, we're doing all pretty good. So I'm, it's always with the positive waves with me. And I want to make, you know, an opportunity for you to share what you thought was nice about the entire year. This whole time, there's so much going on that it's hard to, you know, not be aware of the pain of so many people. But I don't dwell on it. I try and look at the positive opportunities that we have, and it's there are many. And I always feel this worry thing that you get, you know, about something, you know, things that keep you up at night, things that make it difficult for you to rest, the things that, you know, are always a cloud over you, you know, as you're trying to make long-term decisions, all these kind of things. I see that worry as a motivator, as a sign, as a starting pistol to do something. So I'm always about doing something. You know, I'm like, you know, if you feel uneasy about it, then that means you need to do something about it. Because me and sleep are friends. We're buddies. We're pals. And I just, you know, I don't like having any kind of problem sleeping. And so I don't think really I have, certainly not in years lately, last decade or so. Because you're so busy doing, you know, the stuff that you know you need to do that you don't really have to worry about, sleep. And I'm telling you, as you go through life, if you're not sleeping well, it's either physiological or psychological thing, you know, and either one you got to take care of. So I spend a lot of my time making sure that I've done what I can that day to accomplish my long-term whatever it is that I got in mind. And I always focus on what can be done, not what can't be done. And a lot of times it's like we're brainwashed into something else. And that is one I didn't get to finish it. I probably, hopefully, try and finish it today. Peter Diamandis is the guy that came up with the Onasari X Prize, you know, the $10 million to first man in space. And they do a bunch of other X Prizes for lunar landers or, you know, vertical takeoff and landing vehicles and different, you know, they're always, look, you know, we could spend a billion, $1 trillion trying to figure this out, or we can give a prize for somebody to do it, you know, and that's what they do. on the front page today, you'll see Peter Diamandis, The Best Way to Predict the Future. Chairman and co-founder of Singularity University discusses the best way to predict the future and shares his personal philosophies on innovation and the commercial space industry. And I kept getting interrupted, so I stopped, and I said, well, I'm not going to be interrupted anymore because it's over. Oh, it's almost 2 hour video, I think. And I'm pretty sure he's the one that wrote the book. When I was on vacation this summer, a friend of mine read the book while we were up there, and we talked about it. And he was doing the same kind of thing that you kind of see on Freedom's Phoenix a lot. All of the positive things that are happening, all of the innovations and the inventions and the things that are going on that you can take and just predict the future on all of the capabilities we're going to have. And I see that, and I talk to my family and friends, and you can see we had a lot of young people. You know, my four kids and, their cousins, my niece and nephew, and, their new fiance and this and that and so on. And and all the little kids and everything, and you keep them entertained and kind of showing them the lab and doing some experiments and different things and getting them all worked up. But my thing is that that's not being done anywhere else that I know of. I mean, there's some science programs you might have on cable or different websites and so on, but there's no focus on inspiring the next generation on TV or in school or anywhere else. I don't see it being done. When I was a kid, I remember there was a program. Oh, man, it had to be in the early 70s. It was called 20th Century or 21st Century. And 21st Century was all about new innovations and, pick. I remember them doing the first heart transplants. I remember them doing different animal, stuff that now you go to jail for. But they were doing different kind of, operations on goats and sheep, showing they could do various different things and transplant of organs and different stuff like that. But, plastics was a big deal, and that was a lot of news. And they did their best to inspire and encourage the next generation. Because if you can inspire people, you don't have to do it. They'll do it. I mean, the goal is not to do something as much as it is to get everybody to want to do it, and then it gets done in 15 gazillion different ways. So I do my best to inspire because I'm lazy. I remember my younger sisters. I have two younger sisters. The older one is just a year younger than me. I remember her first husband, she married a guy that was in the 101st Airborne. And I knew him in high school and so on, and they dated a long time and such. And when he was in the Army, he said, they do a lot of research by finding who the laziest guy is. And I'm like, what? What are you talking about? And it just stuck with me. It's just, I don't know how prevalent this is. But what he said was when they needed to learn how to do something, they picked the laziest guy to do it and then watch what he did. How did he get the job done with the least amount of effort? So I'm going, okay, I can see some sense in that. And if you got to determine what lazy means. Maybe he's just smart. Maybe he's just, hey, man, I don't have to do busy work. So what they were looking for is he was giving me some examples on different techniques and stuff because they just come out with, new fighting machines. He drove the Bradley, or he was a part of the Bradley crew or something. And when they came up with the Bradley, which is kind of like, it's not quite a tank, but it's not just a truck either. They put different armaments on it and dragons and 50 calibers. And it's an armored personnel carrier that goes in with ass and very fast. And they just wanted to see various different things. And they looked at the smart guys and found a shortcut so they could get things done. That's what we're doing. We're all the shortcuts. to getting things done.
Uncovering the secrets and exposing the lies. That's what the readers of FreedomsPhoenix.com get every day. FreedomsPhoenix.com constantly providing the information, the real news about government policies, and the real relationship we all have with the coercive government. The real condition of the economy, innovations in technology, breakthroughs in energy, health, and computer science. Learn the truth well before it's admitted to in the lamestream media. The corporate media, nothing more than distributors of government propaganda, but now there's an alternative. FreedomsPhoenix.com. Constant news updates on the issues that affect your life in the most important ways. With liberty and property under constant attack, FreedomsPhoenix.com provides the understanding behind the propaganda, and it encourages the participation of its readers. Go to FreedomsPhoenix.com. That's Freedoms with an S, Phoenix.com. FreedomsPhoenix.com. The revolution between the ears has already happened. Rhodes, it's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Yeah, let's go over some of the news. All right. Here we have high-tech guard tower to spy on Buffalo residents. Downtown Buffalo residents were shocked, I tell you, yesterday to see that a high-tech police guard tower had been erected to spy on Thanksgiving revelers using the same technology deployed against illegal aliens on the border. Okay. Excuse me. I saw this, man, a mile away. Let me tell you what, you know, where this came from. In 2002, December 2002, this is like just over a year and a month or so, 13, 14 months from 9/11. There was already the erection of these towers in on remote roads connecting Tucson, the University of Arizona, and the Kitt Peak Observatories that went across Native American Reservation in southern Arizona, about 60, 70 miles north of the border. So it wasn't really a border thing, and it was on an Indian reservation thing, and it was just a test of how many initial bureaucracies could they get at a roadblock. I mean, it was Border Patrol, it was Census, DEA, it was FBI, it was, you know, that blah, 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 you name it, Homeland Security, DALOB, the smorgasbord of whatever. So they had these towers, and what they were is that you could go in and let me do a close-up on those on video so you can see this. Because what they do is they take and pull these as a trailer behind their SUVs or something, and then they just stop, get into this like guard tower thing, and it just hydraulically lifts up, and you have an instant roadblock. So imagine you got the black SUV kind of deal, or white, no matter, and there are two of them going down the road, or one, but a lot of times they have two of them, and all of a sudden they peel off, one goes to one side of the road, one goes to the other, they jump in, it raises up, instant roadblock, instant, and it's mobile. Excuse me. So I'm going, all right, this is... I can see where this is going. In a police state, whoever's making these are going to make a killing. So Terry Bressy, that worked at University of Arizona, that went and did Space Watch, which is kind of looking for the next killer asteroid kind of thing. They're mapping, you know, heavenly bodies that come into close proximity with Earth in case, you know, so we don't die. So I vote he does that. You go ahead. You go check him out, man. So he goes up there, and he has to travel often, you know, several times a week or something like that between the observatory and his home in Tucson, University of Arizona, where he works. So he's in a University of Arizona truck. So they know. But he does that, am I free to leave? Am I being detained? You know, that kind of thing. And he was like, oh, hell no. I see where this is going. And from studying this and being, an activist libertarian kind of guy and a smart guy, you know, family and everything, he's just a smart guy. And he just knew that this was illegal as hell. He goes, the only way that you could do this is you have to have, in the state of Arizona at least, some kind of an agreement to enforce the law with the state, blah, 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 and then this federal jurisdiction on the Indian reservation that you have. I mean, you know, he understood all that and knew that they weren't going to be able to get away when challenged. So he goes, no, I'm not doing it. Well, of course, they kept him for a few hours on the side of the road. You know, they do the dog thing. And while he's sitting there, he saw the whole operation, who did what, how they treated people, what was going on. Now, keep in mind, this is December of 2002. I start doing radio in February of 2003, and Terry came to my attention. We have him on. We start following ever since then. We have our own category, you know, border or checkpoint category and so on, police state, whatever. And he has his checkpointusa.org, I think. So it's Checkpoint USA. You just put in Checkpoint USA in a Google search, and you'll come up all the videos. Now, they tried to get him fired. The Border Patrol, anything he was doing, it wasn't illegal, but he worked for a government agency, you know, a government-funded university. And Space Watch, I'm sure, is some government grant or something. So they're going, oh, we'll take care of this guy. And they did everything they could to get him fired. But those people, from his past experience, they knew that he'd make a big deal out of it and sue and all this other stuff. So they just kind of let it go. But it wasn't for lack of effort on the Border Patrol union. I'm like, the union? Seriously? One, they have a union. And then they're going out, you know, anybody that challenges their authority, you got the union suing them, which I thought interesting. So during this process of him challenging this, Mark Victor took on the case, and they went to and got all the criminal things dismissed. They wouldn't do this. They wouldn't do that. And you know, during the serving discovery, you found out all kinds of stuff. And finally, he filed suit and went all the way to the Ninth Circuit, and he won on, you know, little portions of it. Oh, as long as you have this right paperwork, then I guess you can, you know, that kind of stuff. But in the process, we learned early on about these towers and the company behind them and this entire Homeland Security domestic industry surveillance police grid camera thing. I mean, you know, these companies, they're part of the military industrial complex. And we have become the enemy. We have become the target. So we, the people, are on the man's list. And if you're on that list, all you need is a facial recognition sample. So they put these towers up at large gatherings, or certainly the cameras. We started hearing about it in the mid-2000s. Here they're going with facial recognition at Super Bowls. Remember that? Now they're having at Thanksgiving Day parades. And, of course, 4th of July, you know, that's right around the corner. So Independence Day, we're going to have these cameras. If we haven't already, you know they have. So they put these booths up, and they just surveil. And I, you know, the thing that's, it wouldn't be so bad if it was equal opportunity information gathering for everybody, and it got the bad guys doing bad stuff, you know, like an officer beating the crap out of or punching you. You got to count on somebody's camera or their cell phone because, you know, it gets erased from their surveillance tapes. You know, you don't see that. It's not offered up as, you know, proof of. So this is one thing that I've been watching for, God, almost a decade now. And we've been looking at this because I could see how they would improve on it, arm it more, give it more capability. It's bulletproof. It's going to have all kinds of different tools on it. Area denial weapons, you know, with microwaves. You know it's going to get stock full of all kinds of riot gear. You can't come in. We're here. Screw you thing. This is going to be the sign of the police state as we move forward. They're going to be very common. You're going to see them at a lot of public events. You're going to have them taking and photographing and facial recognition of any and everybody all the time. This is the state that we have created or allowed to be created. Not in my name, but here we go. And what are you going to do about it?
It's time
for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800.
Okay, we'll go over some of the news here. No sailors saw Osama bin Laden's alleged burial at sea. Now, that whole thing is just... I mean, if you're going to tell a lie, tell a big one. I mean, you know, just... Yeah, we buried him at sea. Yeah, that's the ticket. You know, for all you know, he's sitting in some resort somewhere. You think Osama didn't have some kind of dead man file? You know, they go, oh, yeah, let me tell you all the real relationship between me and the CIA. So they go, nah, he's one of the made boys. Well, yeah, we killed him. We buried him at sea. It's over. Done. Yay. Let's go rally at the White House and have a party. And which they did. You know, a lot of the, you know, Democratic supporting students nearby, they on flash mob Twitter list or something, they go out and yay. And I'm like, seriously, you know, we'll see. Buried at sea. So there's nobody that can confirm. Well, what happens? You know, Lord knows what happened. We don't know what happened. We never know what happened. We only know what they want us to think happened. Remember the staged photos of them watching the raid live? You know, and it came out that all those photos were staged. You know, some, you know, you believe these guys? More than a year after Navy SEALs supposedly killed former CIA asset Osama bin Laden, a Freedom of Information request by the Associated Press has produced emails revealing that no American sailors aboard the USS Carl Vinton witnessed the terrorist burial at sea. The heavily redacted emails are said to be the first public disclosure of government information about the undocumented assassination. An email supposedly sent by a Navy officer claims Osama bin Laden was washed, wrapped in a white sheet, and then placed in a weighted bag, according to the Daily Mail. Another email allegedly sent by Vincent's public affairs officer claims only a small group of the ship's leadership was informed of the burial. You know, blah, blah, blah. Even the extra information you get is BS information of information pretending to be information. I don't listen to what... Anyway... A military officer read prepared religious remarks, which were translated into Arabic by a native speaker. After the words were complete, the body was placed on a prepared flat board, tipped up, whereupon the deceased body slid into the sea, Admiral Charles Guyette said in the email. So, you know, there's just, you don't know. And why would they do this anyway? You know, I mean, I'm sure there's some reason, whatever. Whatever. So that'll be a conspiracy, another one to occupy somebody's time for a while. I just, you know, I'm not going to spend any more time on it than I just did. Anthony Gregory, whenever he writes anything, I'm like, ooh, what did Anthony write? So this is my weekend reading here, too, but I wanted to put it up on the site. It's when Hamas, a quasi-state claiming to represent the Palestinians, launches rockets that predictably kill or maim everyday Israelis, destroy property, and cause fear among civilians, it is committing terrorism. Regardless of the legitimate grievances Palestinians have, it is wrong to use deadly violence in a way that inevitably hurts the innocent. This is the moral principle toward which we should hope all humanity strives. When the Israeli state, claiming to represent the Israelis, launches bombs at densely populated Palestinian neighborhoods, killing and injuring many civilians, this too must be condemned. The right of self-defense against aggressors does not entitle one to inflict collective punishment or even to be criminally reckless with the lives of innocent third parties. Now, that discussion is exactly what's been going on. My entire adult life, I've been hearing about Israel. You know, it's ouch quit it. You know, it's been, you know, terrorist hijackings and so on. There were Cuban people trying to escape Cuba and wanting refuge here in Florida when I was a kid, you know, I was taking over airplanes and landing and wanting to go back to Havana or leave Havana or whatever it was. And that was the excuse for having metal detectors. You know, that was the beginning. And I'm okay. And, you know, a lot of Americans didn't fly as much as they do now. So it didn't affect as many people, and it was just walking through a metal detector, and you know, what the heck. And but it's just, you could see it grow. You could see it come. You could see the concept. It's not the reasons why, you know, people are doing this kind of stuff, you know, with embargoes and trade restrictions and all this that cause people, desperate people to do desperate things. It's just, they don't even think of it that way. It's a control. Well, then we'll just control that situation. We'll just control the people. We'll just control it. We'll more cattle chutes and more cattle prods and more force and coercion, taxing, regulation, licensing. We'll just control it more until it's out of control. And the respect for any kind of law is lost. Well, then you're in trouble. You know, and I think that's kind of what Anthony's doing here. Isn't there some kind of a fundamental base right and wrong thing that we can judge everybody? And I think so. Non-aggression principle. I vote that one. You know, it's leave me aloneism. You know, all right. Chuck Baldwin writes an article for Thanksgiving, Farewell to a Giant. On this Thanksgiving Eve, I am reminded of how blessed I have been to be able to rub shoulders with many of the political and religious giants of the 20th and now 21st century. During the past 30 years plus, I have been allowed to get to know a good many of the men and women that would have to be regarded as giants in the fields of religion and politics. Many of these have already passed on, a few remain. In the field of politics, the giant of them all is Texas Congressman Ron Paul. There is no doubt in my mind that history will regard Dr. Paul as the greatest congressman in U.S. history. Ron Paul has done more to guard and defend liberty and constitutional government than perhaps any man since Thomas Jefferson. Dr. Paul's legacy and influence will remain after most congressmen and senators have been long forgotten. What Patrick Henry was to colonial America, Ron Paul has been to modern America. I am so grateful for the opportunity to get to personally know this man and to be able to call him my friend. And, of course, it goes on from there, but you get the drift. I mean, you know, Dr. Paul, he could leave right now on a very high note, but I don't think he's done. And what are some of the issues that are going to come up? I tell you the big one is secession. I mean, how radical can you be than to advocate for the ability to dissolve the union? That is, wow, and who would get away with that? To even say it. You know, Dr. Paul comes up and says, you know what? You're not free if you're not allowed to leave. How can you be free and forced into a relationship? And these were a lot of the arguments that were used during building up to and after the beginnings of the Civil War. It was slavery may have been the PR thing, but it really wasn't about that. It was about control. Who gets to control? Who gets to force their will on? And the idea that you could take, and this is before the 14th and 13th Amendments and so on, when it was the United States of America, which meant they were their own sovereign states, and they were united only under a common, you know, defense of, you know, our shores and stuff. And add some other things. And that was never really the intent anyway. You know, the Articles of Confederation just kind of got supplanted by the Constitution, you know, and Hamilton and banker friends just, you know, forced it through. And that's a whole nother story. But, you know, this, and they saw, I smell a rat. You know, Patrick Henry's freaking out going, oh, I see where this goes. And to keep a second revolution from starting right up amongst the same people that had the first one, they decided, okay, we'll do this. Ten thou shalt not to government. You don't have to worry. We'll never mess with these things. And that was the Bill of Rights. Well, they ignore them. So at what point do you get to, I mean, at any time, can you just say, man, we're good. We're done. You know, your debt's too high. We did an initiative in 94 that if the U.S. debt exceeded $9 trillion, Arizona could secede. And they freaked out from us even proposing the concept. Because we knew there was not going to be any limit to this. It was already at like $4 trillion at the time.
Take control of your money today and do it with style. Young Austrians are right now fashioning the silver economy. Would you like to take part? You'll find all the tools you need at DontTreadOnMeme.com. Don't Tread on Meme is the only place where you can get your hands on silver dime trading cards with the most unforgettable designs, like Clint Eastwood's Fistful of Silver Dollars, Murray Rothbard, Enemy of the State, the Ron Paul Lovelution, and the cover art of George Orwell's book 1984. Download the free silver calculator app from the iPhone or Android markets and get up-to-the-minute silver spot prices at your fingertips. And hey, we're all Austrians now, so why not express your passion for silver and promote the ideas of honest money with Don't Tread on Meme's clever apparel. Boycott an empire of theft. Buy silver. Trade with value. Build a society of consent. Do it all at DontTreadOnMeme.com. That's DontTreadOnMeme.com.
Freedom is the answer. What's the question?
I want to break free.
You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
I want to break free. I want to break free from.
Yeah, Donna's going to join us at the end of the beginning of the second hour, and we'll just talk it. We're like semi off drinking our coffee. Good morning. And you're listening. Why aren't you sleeping in? Oh, but maybe on archive. All right. Now, this secession thing, in my opinion, I can see where this is going. In 94, we doing activist stuff. We find a bunch of initiatives and being buttheads and so on. We had like 36. I mean, every year we would, you know, continue to file different ones just to, you know, this is what we would do thing. Well, we just us doing that changed a bunch of laws. They wanted to limit how we even filed it, and it's just because they can. And one of them was if the country exceeded, I think it was $9 trillion. I don't know where that number came from, but Manfred, a friend of mine, was the one that did it. And he goes, yeah, I know what I want to do. This is the initiative I want to do. If they exceed, he had two initiatives. One was a repeal from any call for a constitutional convention. And it was a big John Birch thing that was going on at the time. And what they were doing is they said, you know, we're only a couple of states short of the, I think it was 33 that was needed to call a constitutional convention. And it was really the big push in all the states until Oklahoma City bombing. When that happened, all of a sudden it just kind of went away for some reason. And but there was a big press. Every governor was having their constitutional convention committees kind of put together. It was getting ready to go. And Arizona was one of the states that we made this into a big deal. And started with this initiative that we filed that we rescind and recall and purge from any record that we had ever even called for a constitutional convention in the state of Arizona. And this is what we learned during the process. There were several attempts to change the U.S. Constitution. Now they just ignore it, so I guess it doesn't matter. But, you know, at the time, they used to, like, care. And what they did is they go, all right, we're going to change the Constitution, do a whole big thing like they did with the convention to get it the first place from the Articles of Confederation. But we have to have the states call for it. The first one was, what was it? It was Equal Rights Amendment. I think there was one before it. But the Equal Rights Amendment, they were to get a constitutional change that we need to have all of these states ask for a convention in order to do that. Well, they just did it. I mean, you know, the Equal Rights Amendment just floated around. They go, oh, well, it's not going. We just need to have a convention or something. And what they did is they go, you know, we need this so bad that we're going to make it part of every single campaign for every election cycle, for every office, forever. You know, it's like, you know, what are you on the Equal Rights Amendment? What do you think on this? What do you think on that? I remember a Phil Donahue show in the 70s. Bob Hope was on, and they asked him, oh, we're going to get Bob Hope on the Phil Donahue to weigh in on the ERA, the Equal Rights Amendment. You know, it's a women, you know, can't give special rights or privileges based on sex. I don't know why you even needed it. You know, it seems you go to individual and not classify everybody as something. You know, it's a you fog this mirror, you're treated equally under the law. I mean, you know, that's what the 14th Amendment is. So it's just politics. But we find out later that, well, what happens, they asked Bob Hope about it. He goes, oh, I think it's great for the women to give up all that power. You know? He always, you know, he's given the impression, of course, that they were more powerful and they're going to bring them down. So I'm going, ah, well, that was a good one. All right, you're Bob Hope. Now, this is, I could see that they were using pressure on every single candidate for any office. What was their, and it got to the point that finally, just to, I guess as a promise of the media or something, that there was a deal that if the state requested a constitutional convention using the ERA, the ERA as a condition or a reason, and they would put it in their documents, say, you know, in order to blah, 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 we call for a convention for the limited purpose of. Well, then big discussion whether you can limit it or not, which it's a convention. They can do whatever they want once they go in convention. But the excuse was Equal Rights Amendment. So they got a bunch of states. And it was from this pressure that they did just, and state legislatures would just go, yeah, fine, here, we call for a convention. If you ever get it enough in here, and that's the reason why, and go away. So it would just kind of, you know, start to go away, and they got as many states as they could on that, and then the issues changed. Well, those stayed there. Then they had the balanced budget amendment. Okay, there was a balanced budget amendment thing. There was another one, too. I can't remember what it was. But there was, oh, it was abortion. That's what it was. And it was, you know, a constitutional amendment on abortion. So you get Equal Rights Amendment. You get a bunch, you know, kind of more left liberal leaning New England area type California thing. And then you get the abortion thing. Oh, man, you got the Bible Belt guys on that one. And then they were a few short and they did balanced budget amendment, which don't mean nothing, you know, whatever, like they pay any attention to the other amendments. So I'm going, okay, so there was these three that they had one thing in common, to call for a constitutional convention. And they all accumulated. So if you had 20 states on one issue and 10 states on another one, well, you were 30 there. You get a few states on balanced budget thing, boom, you're in convention. So this was a big deal. I mean, a lot of people, you know, this is John Birchin kind of thing, man. They were all, we going to commit, here we go. Well, the Nelson Rockefeller, if I got it right, yeah, I think Rockefeller, one of them, I think it was Nelson. There's one that was VP candidate at one time. There was one that, and I think the same guy was president of the Senate, and they, you know, of course, their family ties and all that. And what they had created was the New States of America, the Constitution for the New States of America. If you look that up, Rockefeller, New States of America Constitution, there it is. They had created this new, and it turned rights into privileges. You know, you'd be granted, you know, under whatever, and license for, and they wanted central planning. That's why they're up there going, ah, we should have never invented the internet, or never allowed the internet, or never created the internet. That was the Rockefeller guy saying that. Why? Because they were losing control. America was so much more easily manipulated. Heck, just yesterday, the day before, we had Netanyahu up there quoting in a recorded conversation he didn't know was being done, saying, ah, America is easy to handle. You know, we can manipulate them into whatever we want. So this is how we're seen. So what they did is they go, okay, we're just one or two states shy of having a constitutional convention called. In the state of Arizona at the time, we saw that they did, it was called the Constitutional Defense Committee, and it was Fife Symington as governor created this thing, and it was supposed to be that they kind of advised the attorney general to go press for states' rights on a lot of different stuff, because it was kind of going that way. You know, we could see that, you know, we're going against, you know, well, it was Clinton administration, so, you know. So we go, okay, well, then we knew some of the people on that committee that were high-up officers in the Republican Party and everything that were, you know, closet libertarians, or their husband was or something. So they, you know, were sharing with us. And they go, look, this is not a defense. This is all part of this constitutional delegation for the convention. This, they created this committee on one thing, but what they're really doing is this is going to be the appointing process for the delegates that go to the convention of the United States of America Constitution change thing. And we're going, oh, well, we filed that initiative. There's two of them, to rescind all calls for constitutional convention and purge that we even called. Now, Nevada had already done this. Florida was doing it. And it was, you know, starting to get minus states. They go, well, once you, the American Legislative Exchange Council, which was, you know, we rule everybody through, we give a CD or bills for these guys to pass, go pass them, you know, if you want to be congressman someday kind of thing. And so we're starting to find out who's really running everything. And, of course, it's a Koch brother kind of deal, you know, same crap. So what happened was, is we go, all right, how are we going to rescind this? Well, Nevada did this. He said, we rescind any and all call for ever calling for the convention and purge documents from existence that ever said that we ever did. The federal government goes, you can't do that. And they go, do what? We know what you're talking about. That's how effective it was. So Nevada pulled. Then Florida. Then, it, you know, it started. Then Arizona, we do the initiative. No, we're rescinding. No, it became a bill. It got all kinds of problems. And at the same time, we had an initiative that if the United States went over $9 trillion in debt, Arizona would vote to secede. Well, we're way past. And at the time, they were making fun of us. Oh, you guys are crazy. That'll never happen. Then what do you care? And why are you so worried about us doing this? We've been way ahead of this because we knew what was coming. They were never going to stop spending. And they're still not. Not even going to slow down. They're just going to slow down the rate of speeding up. So, the argument of secession, Dr. Paul is going to champion that, and I don't think it's going to go away. It's going to be, like, in the Fed.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here!
No fear here in the clear. Your independence of me, Ernest Hancock, here in Phoenix, Arizona. Hey. Now, what we're going to go ahead and do is we're going to go ahead and demonstrate no fear from my sister. She's going to come in and say, yo, what's up? And Donna will be here. Everybody's just kind of aftermath, afterglow of Thanksgiving, and we're chilling, and we'll get to visit with the kids more today and tomorrow, and we're just having a nice weekend. But don't think that we're not, you know, aware of, you know, stuff. Now, my sister and I, we grew up in, you know, I don't talk about my parents, you know, because, you know, out of honor to them while they're still alive, and just like, you know, positive waves. But one of the things that my father was really big on was camping. And we learned a lot of stuff. And he would try and, you know, come. He's one of those guys that, you know, yeah, this is how you do it. You know, you just make it up or whatever. You know, later we'd find out, you know, how we're supposed to tie the knot or something. But, you know, at least he knew that there were things that we should know. And we would learn along with him a lot of things on building. I mean, he definitely, you know, when it came to building anything, be it from models or, you know, homes. I mean, the guy, he'd just dive in and get the right tool and figure it out as he went on. And that's where I got a lot of my just do it. You just start doing it. You just, once begun, half done. I mean, you just start doing it, and then you'll figure it out as time goes on. So I can just dive into stuff because I can't think of a single time that I haven't at least learned a lot just by doing that. So we know what, you know, how to survive probably more than most families by just being innovative, you know, being industrious, just hard work. So we've, you know, come out, and we always have kind of a positive attitude on it. You know, my sister and I, we get by. We raise our kids that way. You know, they're very productive. You know, they've accomplished way more than we did by that age. They're in their mid-20s, and I wish I made as much as any of them at our entire life. You know, I mean, is that true, Rhonda, or what?
That is true.
You know, I'm just going, you look at these guys, and they're just, you're going, damn, you know, very productive individual. But it comes from, you know, how they're raised at a young age. Now, what I wanted to do is we'll yak about whatever, but what I want to do is I want to go over the news. This is all the stuff that they say, no politics, Uncle Ernie, you can't not allowed to say anything. So I'm like, no. So I'm all quiet. So now I'm all built up. All right. These are the stories that we can talk about and you get to comment on. You ready? We call it like an ink block test. What do they call it? The Rorschach test or something. Hollywood, and you give an opinion on this. You ready?
Okay.
Your expert opinion. Okay. So here we go. Here is an estimated vehicle miles driven on all roads. What happened in November of 07, all of a sudden it started to drop. And the United States was on a steady increase of how much we drove our automobiles. And you could pretty much predict that it was just going to keep going up. Then all of a sudden, something changed. Well, it's the economics, the economy. And the biggest thing is I think what happened was just Americans finally got the, you know, I'm going to start focusing more on home, on, you know, spending time with family. I don't have to be going somewhere all the time. It was like we're filling all of our extra time from technology with our smartphones and all that kind of stuff with just more work and more things to do, more and no contemplation, no just quiet time, no just sitting down. So all of a sudden, you know, Kindles start to hit, reading becomes more popular. You have different avenues of entertainment at home, you know, the big screen television, surround sound and all this stuff. All of a sudden, you know, driving starts to go down. Well, I'm, you know, from your personal experience and from, you know, you live up in Prescott. So if you ever want to come down here, you got to do some driving, you know. But from your personal experience, what do you think this means? Why over the last 5 years has for the first time in like forever, see, when does this chart go back to? Early 70s. So I'm going, okay, from that time on, you know, it was increasing since forever, since cars. You know, all of a sudden, we're dropping down in miles driven. What do you attribute that to, Rhonda?
Gas prices, for one. People don't want to waste money.
So gas prices, then is there anything? I mean, how's the economy up there in Prescott? In the last 5 years, I mean, Arizona is big on tourism and on you know, visiting and, you know, a lot of people going up to Prescott, certainly in the summer. And then I'm going, okay, so when the real estate started to hit and hammer Prescott too, because Prescott is like Southern California and everybody from California is moving to Prescott. I mean, can, you know, tell us in the last, you know, decade, you've been up there probably most of your adult life, you know, so Prescott has changed in what way?
Well, there was definitely a lot of growth for a lot of years. And then when the economy tanked, lots of business closes.
So right now, do you have like shuttered, you know, out of business or just vacant real estate? I mean, commercial real estate in Prescott?
Yes.
Even on the square?
Not so much in the downtown area, but outlying areas, yes.
So are they starting to just board up the entire thing? Is somebody rebuying them or the banks taking them over? I mean, what's happening?
Well, they are rebuying, but it's like overnight businesses opened and then businesses closed in a real short period of time.
In the same place?
Yeah. Like when everything was going good and a lot of building was going on and the economy was good, one thing that I did see was there was a lot of furniture places and there was a lot of resale furniture shops, consignment stores, all that. And then when the housing market tanked, those were like the first thing to go out of business because then people didn't have
houses to put stuff in.
Exactly.
So it's like appliance places.
Yes.
You know, so anything to do with housing.
Mm-hmm.
So is there still construction up there? You have to understand what Prescott is about. For the audience, if you've ever been to Southern California, it's a lot what Prescott is like. And what happens is you go from the valley down here, it'll be 110 degrees. you'll go up the hill, we call it. You're going to higher elevation, and it's kind of a plateau up there. That's what's the elevation of Prescott? It's a little bit higher than here.
5,100 feet, somewhere.
Yeah, so it's kind of like Denver or something like that, all right? You know, Payson and so on, they're all about the same elevation. Payson, I think, is like 4,500. So in the winter months up there, has it snowed yet this year?
No.
But it probably will.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, they get snow, a little dusting every now and then. You know, there's snow every now and then. You get a nice little storm in Prescott. So it's common to have snow there in the winter. So it's kind of a more moderate climate. Yeah, there's a little bit of snow. It's kind of colder than you would like in the winter. And it's still, you know, kind of hot in the summer, but it's not as hot. It's probably 10 degrees colder up there than it is here in Phoenix. So a lot of times you go up to Prescott, it's not as oppressive a heat. So it's kind of a, there are some pine areas up in downtown. And as you start to go up into the mountains, and there's just a lot of large pine trees. And then there's like Prescott Valley that is more just a scrub, low juniper, kind of 5 foot high trees. But it's very popular. And there's a lot of people coming there, and they were developing it like a bad boy. Here came all of the California developers, all the big box chain stores. Prescott was the center of the universe, and a lot of politics were changing there, too. And then it changed. To what? And what are they left with? How much government infrastructure do they now got to support in a smaller community that's not growing?
A science fiction comic adventure from Big Head Press. Quantum Vibe. It's year 2523. There are colonies on Venus, Mars, and Mercury. People travel in bubbles, fly at hyperspeed, with brain implants and artificial gravity. A scientific genius and his clever assistant set out on an adventure through the solar system on a secret mission to find the key to access new frontiers and save liberty. Quantum Vibe. There's a robot girl and zany creatures made with genetically engineered features. And corporate villains crave the opportunity to steal a profit from others' ingenuity. A scientific genius and his clever assistant set out on an adventure through the solar system on a secret mission to find the key to access new frontiers and save liberty. QuantumVibe.com.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800. And now, Ernest Hancock.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence. With me, Ernest Hancock. You know, Donna's sitting in. My sister, Rhonda, lives up in Prescott, which is about an hour and a half north of Phoenix, in the cooler pine country. And, you know, Arizona has a very wide, diverse climate. You know, I give you an example. Right now, if we get our first snowstorm, which is due any day, we're laying out in shorts having Thanksgiving dinner outside. High could be, you know, up in the high 70s. Do you know what the temperature is predicted yesterday, what it was?
I think it was 80-something.
So here we're talking 80 degrees, all right? So that is, you know, warm for a lot of people. But we could do, in a 2.5-hour drive, we could go snow skiing. You know, the snow hadn't hit yet, but usually this time of year, between Thanksgiving and Christmas around then, you're laying out getting a suntan, you go snow skiing. So we go, yeah, baby. So Arizona, and we have different country that, like, we went camping at Jackalope Freedom Festival in August, big pines. You could have dense, lush ground cover forest. You could have a lot of really nice, you know, variations, and you could go out in the Monument Valley in the beautiful, big, giant mesas, like skyscrapers in the desert. You can go into the lower deserts where you have big, Joshua trees, big cactuses. You know, a lot of things that, just a wide variety. And in the summer, there are cool places to go. I mean, it was nice weather. It was about this temperature when we were at the Jackalope Freedom Festival beginning of August. So, and it would rain, and 5 minutes later, you didn't even know it rained. You know, because of the way the sandy meadow was and so on. So there is a lot of diversity in Arizona. Donna and I drove around the country this last summer just because we wanted to try and, you know, just get a diversity and see, you know, do we really want to stay in there? Yeah, probably. And this secession thing makes it a lot easier. I'm going, you know, can we secede? You know, just, I mean, just can we? Whether we would or not, are we allowed? So I want to ask both of you guys, I mean, what do you think about the first concept of, you know, Arizona just be its own country and, you know, we're done United States of America. What do you think, Donna?
I don't care either way. I just think they should have the right to do it if they want. So if people want it, go for it. But I think, I don't know what kind of problems it'll solve being not linked to Washington anymore.
And not have their debt, not on our grandkids.
Yeah, okay, just cut loose and, you know, be done.
You know, but it's just the concept of doing it. But, you know, it's like then we got the Arizona government to deal with. And then it's, you know, seriously, can we secede down to the individual?
Can we? Probably not in this world, but we can in our minds, I suppose.
That's all I care about anyway. Yeah. You know, it's like, you know, let me see. I declare my independence. See how easy it was? No form.
Yeah. Can't is never a word in our household, I don't think so.
So, Rhonda, I mean, you even contemplate that? You think in your lifetime, if it's someone like Dr. Paul, you know, that's had this, I mean, because you kind of saw from a distance all this Levolution stuff that your brother's involved in and everything, and you're like, yeah, whatever, just another Ernie thing. But, you know, this is this idea that the states would break up or they just secede, which has been predicted for a long time anyway. I mean, did that ever even cross your mind, or is it, you know, you care?
It's never crossed my mind.
And do you care?
I do care.
Why?
Because it just doesn't seem right that the United States would not be united anymore.
Okay. Now, this is a good question. Yeah, you know, I always do the why thing. You know, this is the one thing I'm known. I'm going, why, why, why? And that's what Kaylee does. Why, why? What she's really saying is it's not even really why is appropriate for what she's saying a lot of times. But what she's really saying, okay, I understand. Tell me more. You know, you go, well, this because of this, why? Oh, she's going, okay, I get that part. Next, more information, input, you know. She's wanting more, why, why? And everybody else goes, oh, I can't believe she keeps saying why. Then just keep talking, keep explaining. She wants more information, and you need to encourage that, you know. So, you know, we do that. Now, here's my why, okay? I'm encouraging, I want more information, all right? Why do you think it matters that the United States stay united? Why? Where'd that come from? Why do you care?
So that we'd be stronger.
Ooh, and who told you that?
The United States.
No. You see, the point is that it's in our mind that, you know, well, we're less safe if we're not united, okay? United we stand, divided we fall. Okay, yeah. That's a catchy one right there. United we stand, divided we fall. We who? You know, who falls? The Washington? Okay. Need a crowbar? I mean, you know, I'll help you. You know, I mean, it's ingrained. And Don and I, we went, you know, the book, this is what happened yesterday. We went to Grandparents' Day. When was it, Donna?
Tuesday.
So Tuesday we go to Grandparents' Day and we take a bunch of pictures on our phones and everything. And Donna created, you know, a thing for Kaylee.
It was a photo album of our adventure to her school, which... it would be a memory for her, but we made a special picture book just for her, which she carried around all day yesterday. She treasured it.
Yeah, she looking at this thing, you know, all the pictures, her showing us, ooh, you know, Grandma and Grandpa Day. It was cool. Now, you know, but what was the one thing that you know I'm going to bring up?
Pledge of Allegiance.
Oh, three-year-olds in there. Rhonda, you got to hear this. This is good. Pledge of Allegiance time comes, and they go, oh, the teacher, you know, and she's probably in her 60s or something. You know, she's thinking, you know, this is a course. You know, it's a Christian preschool. They're going to pledge, man, you know, you think they're communist or something? We're going to pledge Sieg Heil to this, you know, fabric. So they get up, the three-year-old kids, and they're sitting there, meh, 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 meh. They don't know what the hell they're saying. You know, they can't hardly say it. So everybody's like, but the second, and all the grandparents are sitting in kind of, you know, the little chairs, you know, or sitting in, there's probably a couple dozen of grandparents. As soon as they started, all of a sudden somebody stood up and then boom, everybody got up. It was like a freaking Nazi parade, okay? Sieg Heil! You know, and they all started doing the play. And Donna and I was I was pretty surprised that it was so in unison like that. It was just like the last one standing was a communist, okay? So they, boom, they jump up, and we were sitting there, both of us sitting down, holding our droids. We were focused on the kids. All that went away. Everybody else there just, boom, cameras go down. I pledge allegiance. And they go through and let them through the thing. Well, we just sat there, you know, videotaping it, you know, taking pictures. And it shocked me. And I knew from reading their itinerary when Laura first started taking Kaylee there that it had, oh, we do this and greet the kids. And then we do Pledge of Allegiance. I'm like, seriously, three-year-olds, Pledge of Allegiance. So I wanted to see. I wasn't going to make a big deal out of it, but I sure as heck wasn't going to, you know, pop to my feet. So as we're watching this, you know, the kids do, they don't know what's going on, but the grandparents did. And man, to a person, they go, boom, how fast could they get up? And that bothered me. I was like, wow. And let me tell you how you get this United We Stand thing, how you get America thing. We got to save America. United States, big, powerful. We're safer by having this big, giant police state telling us what to do and how and every... It starts with three-year-olds doing I Pledge Allegiance. That's how it starts. So everything that you're thinking, everything that you think's the right answer, everything, it was all ingrained in you. Through the military-industrial empire, we rule you of the educational mandatory youth indoctrination camps of...
Rhodes? It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Oh, yeah, I'm right back. I want to show... Now, look at this. You see how the picture is here? That's how it used to be, the pledge. You know, so I'm showing my sister, you know, talking about the Pledge of Allegiance and how, and yeah, and she remembers, you know, the pressure that she would have to do the pledge. You know, it used to be you had your hand over your heart or at your side or something, and you go, I pledge allegiance to the flag. And when you said the flag, it would be like a Nazi salute with your hand out, with your palm up pointing to the flag. That was the original salute. And what they did, you're talking in the, it was a wiki thing we brought up here. What they did is, this was Bellamy, Francis Bellamy was, behind this. He was a socialist Christian, you know, a Christian socialist or whatever. And this is right after the Civil War. They're kind of, you know, there's still this, you know, whether America is the America they thought as they conquested the South and killed hundreds of thousands of, I mean, it just, you know, ew, didn't feel good. So he was saying that at the beginning of the 90s, patriotism and national feeling was at a low ebb. The patriotic ardor of of the Civil War was an old story. The time was ripe for a reawakening of simple Americanism, and the leaders in the new movement rightly felt that patriotic education should begin in the public schools. James Upham felt that a flag should be on every schoolhouse, so the publication fostered a plan of selling flags to schools through the children themselves at cost, which was so successful that 25,000 schools acquired flags in 1 year. Now, keep in mind, before that time, before the Civil War, you were a Virginian or a Georgian or a Massachusettsan or whatever. You were a citizen of that state. The state, the government itself, kind of had this, you know, united common defense, constitutional kind of whatever. And the Article 1, Section 8 was kind of, you know, everything that's not specifically spelled out as the powers of the federal constitution, then it all belongs to the state and the people respectively. You know, go, you know, peace be upon thee. Well, this feeling was really even more so after the Civil War. And everybody's like, look, man, you know, fine. You conquered, but we're stayed up. Well, after that, they wanted to bring, no. We got to get into the minds of the people this concept that we have a United States is not united individual states, like the state of Israel, the state of this, the state of that. It was the United States was a single entity in and of itself. And that is, I mean, and you see it progressively get more and more that way with, you know, forced integration. You know, my sister and I, we remember we were doing the forced busing and so on in the 60s and 70s, you know, when we were in Florida, and they're, you know, putting us, oh my goodness, you went to this black school. And we're going, yeah, cafeteria, the black cafeteria, man, I never had better food. I'm like, they actually took the money and put it into the food for the kids. So I'm going, yay. So that kind of, you know, lasted about a day. You know, we had the lunch and we're going, you know what, we're good here. So, you know, it's amazing the things that are important to kids. But, you know, the parents are all freaking out. So they wanted to have some kind of a consolidated whatever. And we're in Vietnam, you know, that war. So it's us versus the communist. It was always east-west block kind of thing, threat of nuclear. We're in Florida, so the Cuban Missile Crisis. You remember Dad's always, you know, prepping and freeze-dried this and kind of stuff. He was, you know, kind of semi-prepper back then. And our mother, her whole side of her family, and her sister Sherilyn, all Mormon. So, man, it's, you know, the culture. We just grew up and, yeah, you don't have a couple of years worth of food, dummy. I mean, you know, so then we had the hurricanes in Florida. You know, that was always a big prep thing. Remember, Dad used to track the hurricanes on charts and stuff. And so before the internet. And so all of this stuff, you know, was how we grew up. And there's been this incorporation of this concept of a country based on what? On conquest of the states. And to keep that, you know, they passed things like Patriot Act and, you know, alien sedition laws, you know, in the Adams administration early on. And now we have, you know, the same kind of thing. You know, presidents can just, you know, swoop you up and take you, no trial, no nothing. You go to Gitmo and you're done. You're not allowed to complain. So I can see where it was would be important to perpetuate this pledging to a national Washington, D.C. thing. And keep in mind, 100 years ago, in the late 1800s, a lot of the schools, they didn't even have an American flag. That wasn't even their focus. There was no Pledge of Allegiance. It was about education, not indoctrination. It was more locally controlled, but they wanted to bring, and where did they go first? They went to the schools. The patriotism and national feeling was at a low ebb. So what did they do? They went to the schools. Why? Because they wanted to bring up a generation of people so that when they became grandparents and they started saying the national anthem, they all clicked their heels, got to their feet, and did it. And I remember this one movie called Iron Sky that just came out. It was a, you know, go look it up. You can watch it online. It's pretty funny. But it's about Nazis on the moon, on the dark side of the moon. And whenever something would happen, in case of emergency, you know, break glass, and they break it, and they pull the lever, and it'd start singing the national anthem, all right? So what she, one of the heroines wanted to get by with something, so she goes and pulls the lever, and they start doing the national anthem, then everybody clicks her heels and starts, you know, singing the anthem, then she sneaks around behind them and goes and does whatever. I saw the same thing right in front of my eyes less than a week ago. You know, if in trouble, pull lever. And I'm like, wow. So as you look, remember your first days, you know, in school. Do you remember learning the Pledge of Allegiance? Was that a memory in your head?
Yes, I do. I remember the pressure of feeling got to get the words right. It was a big deal. Probably first grade, I think I remember. Maybe
you know,
kindergarten.
You know, I remember they didn't have kindergarten for me. You know, I think you were the first one to go to kindergarten.
In our family, yeah.
So that had to be like mid-60s, 66, 7, around in there.
Yeah.
You know, and maybe even later. Was it in the late 60s? And, you know, she got to go to kindergarten. Oh, Rhonda gets to go to kindergarten, okay? And I remember, you know, kindergarten, where'd that come? And then I learned it was a German word. You know, kindergarten is a German word. It's like, you know, get them early. Now, here in Arizona, you remember a few years ago when Janet Napolitano, head of the Gestapo now, right, Homeland Security, when she was governor, what was the one big thing? I don't know if you probably remember all this stuff. She wanted taxpayer-funded preschool. Okay? That was her big deal. Everything else doesn't matter. Get it. It's the same mentality. The damn kids are coming in the first grade or even kindergarten, and they're not pledging enough. So we need to get them at early. You think the government preschools ain't pledging? Well, of course they are. You know, the private, it's all this mindset of getting them on the plantation. So I'm like, wow, as a grandparent seeing this, you know, what do I say and do? I mean, I mentioned it, my son gets it. And Lord, they just don't care enough. I guess up to grandparents to kind of, you know, assert a little bit in there. You know, I you know, we'll deprogram her. So I don't know. How are we going to handle this, Donna? What do you think we're going to do with Kaylee?
You know, I don't really have a problem talking to the teacher, but I don't think I'd do it in front of the class or anything, or talk to the administration there or whatever. But as far as Kaylee goes, I mean, just tell her just basically what you told Rhonda when she's old enough to understand it and let her make the decision.
You know, this, but they get a warm, oh, we're all, you can see she's all happy. You know, she's in with the crowd. They're doing the pledging. It's like they're singing a song or something, you know, and that's how they want them to feel. And I don't want to talk to the teacher. I mean, you know, what good would that do? I mean, it'd be better you talk to the administration. And but then it's like you're a grandparent. You're just a, you know, we've had problem makers like you before, and we ignore you, and they do whatever they want to do or something. So I'm thinking it has to be a much larger cultural thing. You know, it's like still pledging. You know, I mean, you know, just do signs everywhere. You know, still clicking your heels and pledging. I mean, you know, just something to kind of even bring up the question. You know, even have the discussion. Would that be worthy in an atmosphere of seceding? You know, you get them at the foundation, at the belief system. You start going at that, then you can have a larger impact. Just how I roll, because I know better.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Come on, Rhonda, give me props, you know, good rejoinder music. You know, of course, we're dating ourselves. You know, this pledge thing, I think it's at the core of a lot of the stuff that we do. And because it is so representative of what they're trying to do. Now, there was a controversy. It became a statute. I mean, it's just amazing to me that you would have these kinds of challenges. In 1940, the Supreme Court ruled that students in public schools, including the respondents in that case, which were Jehovah's Witnesses, that, you know, they considered this idolatry, you know, pledging to a flag and so on, which can easily, an argument can be made for that, they could be compelled to swear the pledge. Compelled. We're going to make you. Well, then later, there's a bunch of, mob violence against you. Jehovah Witnesses, I guess they figured they had a Supreme Court ruling said they could go beat up Jehovah's and Witnesses, you know, and then in 43, a few years later, they reversed the decision saying that, all right, public school students are not required to say the pledge. You know, it's compulsory unification of opinion violates the First Amendment, you think? In a later opinion, the court held that students are not required to stand for the pledge. You know, you got to stand. You just didn't have to say it. Okay, there's, you know, you got to click your heels. You just don't got to, you know, mouth the words. So then they say, okay, you don't have to do it. I mean, it goes on and on and on. And now the pledge has taken like four different versions. And one of them, when it first started, it was my flag. It didn't say the flag of the United States, you know, my flag. Because they didn't care. You know, these socialists, they didn't care which flag. It was just a flag. Yeah, that's why I started to realize, that's why I call government, you know, a gang with a flag. You know, hey, we got a, you know, you got a flag. You know, that you have the, God, what's that guy, Izzy Lizard, you know, is a comedian, and he dresses in drag, and he does, he's a British guy and everything, and he's funny, and he gets up, and he made this thing, British Empire goes on the beach in India, and they go, well, it's ours, you know, we're here, got it. And the Indian people go, you can't be the ruler of us, it's our country. They go, got a flag. You know, so if you got a flag, you know, it's all good. And that we have been conditioned to think that way. I remember this being a big deal in 1996 when we went to Washington, D.C. for the 96 Libertarian Party Convention. And I think it was the first year that was on C-SPAN. And it's being broadcast around the country. And all of a sudden, there was a bunch of calls coming in. We started getting emails from friends at home. And people are asking. And on C-SPAN, people are calling in wanting to know where that pretty flag came from, the Arizona flag, which is a blue field on the bottom, and then the horizon has a copper star representing our mining or whatever, and then it has the rays going out, they're yellow and copper, or gold, maroon, whatever, that go out, and it's a pretty flag. And they go, ooh, I like that flag. I want to be with that flag. Can I salute that flag? You know, I mean, that's the impression I got. Ooh, that's a pretty flag. I want one of them. Let's do it. I'm going, seriously? It's about the flag. So I'm just going, okay, okay. So would we be any better off pledging allegiance to the Arizona Purdy flag of? You know, I mean, what's the difference? So which flag was supposed to represent the republic that was going to defend my individual rights, leave me alone, let me raise my children? No, it's that flag that says I got a, you know, at 3 years old, that taxpayer-funded forced school you got to pledge allegiance to. Wow.
About 20 years ago when we first started our activism, I remember you had a little cartoon done or a little thing done, and it said, burn the flag to save the meaning. Powerful.
You know, I'm glad you brought that up. I don't know if Rhonda remembers this. You know about this. The kids, Rhea was probably a few years old. I mean, we had, you know, I don't even think Sierra was born then or something. But we had just, we're going to church, you know, we're starting to raise our young family. It's the late, it's like 88, 89. We're just getting going. And I remember it was the 88 presidential election cycle between Dukakis and Daddy Bush. Okay. And the number one issue at the time, aside from Willie Horton's going to, you know, come out and kill everybody, there's some guy that Dukakis pardoned and then he went and killed somebody or something. So that became the national, who cares. But the other issue that was the main issue was the flag burning amendment. And the big thing was, is that we should have an amendment to protect the flag. And I'm like, wow, have we not gone all the way? That we're willing to protect a piece of fabric that was supposed to represent the right of opinion and expression to burn the flag, you know? And I immediately caught that. But we were immersed in an ocean of this right-wing government-supporting, pledging, heel-clicking Christian community thing. And I'm just going, it's just like, might as well have been, you know, three-year-olds learning Pledge of Allegiance. We were young adults getting the same kind of indoctrination at church. So I'm going, okay. So I took their crayons, they had their little eight-colored crayon thing, and a sheet of copy paper, just blank typing paper, and I drew an image of American flag on it. And in the and then I put flames at the bottom, and I wrote, burn the symbol, save the meaning. And I folded it up and put it in my wallet. And whenever this issue came up, somebody would say, oh, you know, this can't, I just pull it out, show it to them, then put it back. Save, you want to have a long, you know, discussion with Ernie, or you just want to see this? This is enough that I put it in my wallet. I probably still have that piece of paper laying around, so I put it in a box somewhere. But I tell you, that was my first political activism. First. I could feel, is it, you know, how we were raised? Is it a biological thing? Is it the way our brain works or something? To understand immediately that you're just being manipulated. And it was how, what was scary was how easy it was for a lot of people. Oh, yeah. I'm on that team. I'm on Team America flag. And you can't watch a football game. You don't see it all the time on the foot because they do it before or after. It's always before. You go to a football game, NFL football game, the entire field is covered with the American flag every time. They're like Sieg Heil at every game. Oh, and of course, you got, you know, the fighters flying overhead and that kind of stuff. So I can see the indoctrination. And it's a desperation by the man, too. And anybody that goes against that is going to be targeted in one way or another. So I'm going, okay, if we really want to challenge the chains that they have on us, the chains, you know, aren't seen on your wrist. I mean, you know, as much. I mean, they're there, too. But the chains are on your mind. They control your mind. They get you thinking in a certain way. What's your default defensive position? Is it for, you know, the collective, the group, of, regardless of how small the group is, or is it, you know, the support of a country that defends the rights of the individual? That's what made us unique and different. So I'm going, you know, I'm for the individual right to piss me off as long as they're not aggressing against me. I don't care. You want to be stupid and go be stupid over there. But you can't force me to be stupid. You know, go be stupid. Hell, I'll learn from you being stupid. Go be stupid. So this is, you know, you can see from your brother's activism doing all this kind of stuff, it's always been at some issue like this. Flag burning, Pledge of Allegiance, just seceding, you know, from the, all this concept comes from, you know, it comes from a base understanding of where the people are on the side of defending the flag. Okay, well, the republic for which it stands, what's that? I don't know. Patriot Act, war, You know, they say, we the people, as if we're the ones that are responsible for them droning weddings and little children splattered up against the walls, you know, in the, halfway around the world. And somehow that's done in my name. What do I got to do to be, it's not in my name? So you kind of understand why I do the things I do the way I do it now?
Yes.
You know, had you ever before?
Yeah.
You know, that, so what kind of, how did the Lovelution, you know, manifest itself in Prescott? Did it get noticed at all?
Yes, actually, along Highway 69, I saw some of the Lovelution signs. Is that how you say it?
Yeah, whatever you want to call it.
Okay. There, I saw a lot of those along the highway. I'm like, I know that came from my brother's house. Somebody made that down there. But yes, you do see them in Prescott Valley along the highway.
Still?
Yeah, I've seen them just recently.
Oh, yeah, that's still
Highway
going.
69.
You know, this, so this, I don't think it's going to be as difficult to transition to this question, this understanding, as people think. And if Dr. Paul's behind it, you know, this I secede thing, you know, I'm seeing this take. It's going to be probably the biggest threat to the collective of, you know, they, them, those, ever. This is what I think is going to be the next big thing, is freeing our minds to when they do the Pledge of Allegiance. You know, I don't mind the Star Spangled Banner. You know, I kind of like it. You know, it's a concept. Does it still wave over the land? I mean, it's hypocritical. You know, it's not necessarily true. Does it still wave over the land of the free, home of the brave? Probably not. You know, but the thing is that, you know, this pledge thing, if I could do one thing in the next year, other than my battery. Oh, yeah. That was my battery thing. Is it cool? Give me some props here.
His battery is awesome.
Awesome. The lab. Yeah, we're going to start doing the video stuff this week. But if we can get this, our mind free off of this collective, that'd be a good thing done.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here!
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence. I'm here, Ernest Hancock. What shall we talk about this hour? I don't know. The girls are looking for chargers. What are you guys doing anyway? Looking for chargers. Yeah, she left. Oh. Did we talk about your date? No, did we talk about your date last night? Yeah. Okay. All right. So this is, you know, this is interesting. I didn't even talk to her about it yet, so we get the surprise here on air live. Here we go. All right. My sister, how old are you? You're like
48.
Geezer woman. Okay, so she's out. Oh, but beautiful red hair. Now, you went on a date with a boyfriend from high school last night. You're down here. You kind of hooked up. He lives across the country, was visiting family here. You'd be in kind of, you know, hey, we'll go out to the miniature golf kind of like we used to back in the day and say, yo, what's up from, you know, hot and heavy in, you know, senior year in high school. Okay. So how'd you guys even find out about each other's existence?
Just over the internet, and through the years, we've kept in contact off and on.
Was it Facebook?
No. Originally, we found each other on Classmates.
What? Oh, yeah. I remember that. That was a high school, you know, kind of where you went to high school classification thing. I wonder, does that still go on? Does that still work? Or they do that? Or is it just everything Facebook now?
I'm sure classmates is still on there.
Did they ask it? Did you put your high school or year graduate or whatever on Facebook? Is that a category?
Yes.
Of course it is. Okay. So this gentleman, who his initials are Larry. Okay. And you said, yo, what's up? And you guys, so how did the meeting go last night?
Good. It was fun.
And what'd you guys do?
We went to all the old places where we used to go when we were kids.
So that's cool. You guys going to see each other again?
Yes.
Ooh,
that's
are you going steady now?
Charger.
Are you going steady? Oh, yeah. Okay. So you left the charger in the hotel room. You know, I'll teach you not to stay here. So you left the charger. Now you got to get a charger.
Yes.
How far away is the hotel?
Less than 10 miles.
Okay, so you're just going to run, go get your charger, and then, I was going to call you, but my charger, you know, my dog ate my homework. You know, it wasn't my fault. Okay, I get it. All right. So that's cool. Did you had a good time?
Yes.
Well, that's good to hear. All right. So the kids, your two daughters, they went up to, you have two daughters, two sons. The daughters went back up to Prescott. You know, how come they're not down here? Why'd they leave last night?
Because they want to go visit the old places up there, my older daughter.
Yeah, because she just got engaged.
Yes.
You know, Wednesday night was a big surprise. You know, we had a big dinner and everything. So it's been a nice week. And the thing, though, I want to talk about this. I next time I see Rachel, I have a story up, you know, that I wanted to talk to her about, because she works for a large Japanese gazillion-billion-dollar company that's taking over a whole bunch of human resource assets. You know, like you'll have all of these. It's like a monster.com stable of whatever. And I just saw this story we had up on Freedom's Phoenix yesterday. It's about the shortage of high-tech, highly skilled people. Our country is not producing them anymore. I mean, you're getting your share of financial planners and lawyers and, you know, and kind of, you know, the nose pickers, you know, coming out of whatever. But, you know, when it comes to actual managers and manufacturers and people that have skills that are high tech, done. They're not there. And even if you do get them, well, then they got $100,000 debt, you know, from some education that they got. I mean, it's just really everything is set to really screw us. So what happens? These companies come in, and what she's a part of, she's executive assistant to the head SOB in charge, man. I mean, she's way up there. And, you know, but she's still young. She's only, what, 27 or something? So she doesn't really have a worldview. She's very capable to do what she's told and kind of get and anticipate and make sure they get the right colored M&Ms, you know, in his hotel room. But, you know, when it comes down to really understanding the macro effects of something like Obamacare or a philosophy of, you know, getting all the kids pledging or whatever, you know, and the debt and how you go into higher education, all this stuff, you know, kind of lost a little bit. So, you know, it's just time will tell. But I'm telling you, I can see what's going on. They have the database. They are incorporating into a large database all of the assets up here. That's what this LinkedIn thing is all about. You should see her LinkedIn page. You know, it is awesome. It's like, man, it's a promotion that she'd make sure she puts the right pictures up, has the right, all these endorsements from all these CEOs. I mean, I'm like, wow, she got this marketing thing down. So Rachel does a really good job of that. Now, what's happened, though, is this company has a list of all of the human resource backbone of America. That's what they're going for. And they're accumulating more lists by buying up these smaller companies of all of these different people. All of a sudden, you're going to be hearing about LinkedIn gets, you know, bought up by these guys. And I'm going, okay, I see what's going on. And they get them under contract. They get some kind of employment placement kind of deal, you know, that they have. So when they bring over a company to do manufacturing in Tennessee or whatever, boom, they can staff it. You know, that is an enormously powerful thing to be able to do when you start expanding, because the parent company of this has a bunch of manufacturing. You know, so what do you do? You have a little, one of your board of directors goes off and starts buying up all these companies that have the people that you need to staff your invasion, okay? Which is fine. I don't go crap, you know, but I just, you know, just so you can see what the rest of the world sees here. There is limited resources as far as human resources, because they've dumbed us down so much that there's going to be a premium on people that really can do stuff. But the resources are here. What happens? All of a sudden, we find out that the United States is number one in oil production in the world, outstripping Saudi Arabia. Did you know that?
No.
It just came out because they have all these new finds, which they've been there for all this time. Everybody knew. They just blow it off. The truth of what's going on is not even in the same ballpark. There's a couple of things I like showing, like, you know, Patrick, or he just got his bar card. He passed the bar. He's a corporate attorney for a place. And this is what he does. Fills out the government paperwork. They went public, and they need more staff attorneys to, you know, just fill government paperwork. I mean, government paperwork. And I guarantee in the cost and the prices of whatever services that they have and so on, they do a lot of different things. You know, it goes to pay him. I mean, it's government. Government cost us more money than any. It's just amazing. So when you point this stuff out to them, you know, they don't like it. You know, 30 shots. Well, I'm pretty good about it. I don't make a big deal out of it. You know, and they make the mistakes of asking a question. So what happens when somebody asks me a question? What does everybody say?
No.
Don't ask her any question.
Hit the abort button.
Yeah, okay. Let me tell you what the abort button is. On my shoulder, when the kids ask me a question, they're going to get a full answer. Like Kaylee doing the why thing, I'll go all day long. You know, I got an answer for everything. Or we'll go find it, or we'll find the internet, or we'll something. We're going to get the answer. Because I knew as a kid, I was so frustrated. Yeah, look it up, or I don't care, or blow it off, or shine me on, or, you know, BS me, or it just pissed me off. So I always answered the questions. So when the kids, they'd ask, you know, they ask questions because they know I'd have an opinion or something, and then they'd realize what they just did. No, and I'd just be quiet. And I had 10 seconds. I count to 10. 1, 2, 3, silently. I just stand there, act like I didn't hear them or something, and they know what I was doing. If I reached 10 and they didn't hit me on the shoulder and hit the abort button, you know, then they had to listen to the full answer. I go, you got 10 seconds to abort. They're going, abort, abort, abort. And I got my kids chasing me, trying to hit me on the shoulder. Oh, missed. So I get the time. You ask the question. So that's how I do it.
Arizona has been one of the hottest real estate markets in the past, up until the last couple of years. Homes that were once going for $500,000 to $1 million in prestigious areas are now going for less than half of what the original purchase price was. That makes it a very good time to buy. So if you were ever thinking of retiring to Arizona's inviting climate and laid-back and friendly lifestyle, now is the time. That's where I can help. This is Donna Hancock with Brangus Realty, and I have provided a way for you to search for properties that are of interest to you, all at your own convenience and without having to give out any personal information. Visit my webpage at DonnaHancock.com to start your search today. And when you're ready to make a move to Arizona's warm and sunny climate, please feel free to call or text me at 602-828-1819. Many are working hard to make sure Arizona is not only a beautiful place to live, but a free and peaceful one as well. So what are you waiting for? Make your move today by calling 602-828-1819. And don't forget to visit my webpage at DonnaHancock.com.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800. And now, Ernest Hancock.
Peacefully easy. It's Friday. We're, you know, winding down week. We get to, you know, take off and chill. Because I, you know, we have a, you know, a busy weekend. And now, you know, Donna's always really like the holidays. So I try not to schedule any, you know, earth shattering. I got to do stuff during the holidays. Other than we got the December magazine to come out. We're working on the cover with Athena for that. So I'm really excited about this cover. I think I'm going to include it in the calendar. We're going to get everything all ready. And then right when we get this done, boom, we'll go to press. And the calendar, imagine this. It's you know, all the covers of the magazine. But, I mean, this cover for December 2012 is going to be the East Coast of the United States. So you're seeing a sunrise as opposed to a sunset on the West Coast. So the sunrise over the ocean, of course, is, you know, the bird, you know, the phoenix. And then you have on a cliff kind of overlooking, you know, the beach, you'll have, you know, bulldozers to clean up the mess from Hurricane Sandy. But the pier's going out, you know, being repaired and so on. You'll see these airships that have landed and hovercraft and flare craft and all kinds of different modern vehicles that can do this exact same kind of thing for this exact same reason exactly. You know, we're going to depict that in the future. So we're going to go ahead and do the make sure that you kind of see how we would see a voluntary, future-oriented kind of we're going to save the planet thing depicted in this cover. So I want to include that. So I'm optimistic, always have been, as it's good to see Dr. Paul is. There is going to be a massive change. I'm very interested in talking with, you know, after the show, I'm going to be talking to some, you know, people high up in the whatever, and I'll share with you next week. But the main thing that I'm looking for, yeah, I can be involved in some future do whatever, but I don't, you know, I'm not, you know, I tell you the reason why I just stayed away from the campaign. Dr. Paul stayed away from all of the stuff was one thing. I am not in the business of saving the Republican Party. I couldn't possibly care less. So that was definitely no, not prudent at this juncture. So I'm looking at this secede thing, you know, and kind of along goes with that, this pledge thing, you know, a bunch of this stuff, you know, makes a big difference. So I'm going, all right, well, oh, what are we doing? We got, what time is he coming? Is he going to do now? He can go until then? Okay, Jeff Deist just called Donna. He's going to come on. Jeff Deist is chief of staff for Ron Paul's congressional office. So we get him on the phone. We'll just see what's up with him real quick. All right. I guess I won't have to have that conversation. Tell you next week. He can tell us right now. This is, I wanted to know what was going on. This is who I would find out from. For years I've worked on this. Is that him? All right, just put him on. Let's go. Jeff, I got you there.
Hey, Ernie.
Oh, okay. Audience, yeah, this is a treat for you guys. Jeff Deist is, what is your title? You're chief of staff of the congressional office for Dr. Paul, right?
For about another month, Ernie. That is correct.
Okay. Is this a good thing or a bad thing? Are you glad to be out of the cesspool? I mean, you know, tell me.
Well, you know, I came back to work for Ron in 2010 and certainly don't need to be in politics forever, so I'd say it's a good thing. But obviously, we're all sad to see Ron retiring, in a sense.
You know, I'm getting the impression, this is what I want to talk to you about. We're almost at the end of this segment. We got a couple of minutes, but, you know, we'll get one more segment with you. I know you got to go. But this is the main thing that we're looking at. I remember we wanted to get anything done, certainly with Dr. Paul's office, as we're scheduling, you know, and summits and all this other stuff. You want to get something done? You call Jeff. You know, Jeff is like the button pusher, make it go where guy. Well, then he was gone. During the Levolution, you were gone. And then all of a sudden, you know, it's like 10, you come back. Hey, Ernie, I'm back. I'm like, okay, where'd you go? Why'd you leave? You know, tell me that.
Well, we had a child, and so we left so I could go make more money. Long story short. And then in 2010, his longtime chief of staff left, and the you know, it was just kind of a unique opportunity, and so I came back for a few years. But look, you know, Ron's not going away. He's going to be really busy going forward in 2013 and beyond, and there's a couple different ways that folks are going to be able to get in touch with him in terms of speaking engagements, appearances, you know, any kind of radio, etc.
What's his minimum job requirement? He's like, hey, you want me to come to your town to do it? Man, if you don't have 10,000 screaming 20-year-olds at some university, I'm not going. I mean, you know, what's his going to be his requirement?
Well, he's going to do two different kinds of speaking engagements. One would be free engagements where he's going to speak to college students, where he's going to speak to an audience at like a Mises Institute, where he's going to speak to libertarians, that sort of thing. But he's also going to do paid gigs where he's, you know, more of like a, where he's got an agent, he's speaking to maybe a corporate audience, that sort of thing.
There you go. Make the money. You know?
Exactly.
Well, you know, those kind of gigs has always been for some kind of benefit or payoff or a what. I mean, I don't, why would they even want him to come speak? He's advocating for freedom and not getting your place at the trough.
Well, it's interesting because a bunch of different big-time agents in New York, speaking agents, sought him out in the last couple of months. I'm talking about people who represent, you know, the Bill Clintons and the Bonos of the world. So there's clearly, they feel that there's a lot of notoriety and a lot of name ID there. So people, but you know, Ron, he's going to tell people what he's going to tell them.
I know, they just want to lay hands on whatever the event is, you know, and that he's there and they're good guys or not as bad as the other bad guys that want your money, blah, 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 blah. But, you know, Ron, he's going to say whatever he's going to say. So I'm not worried about that. You know, the, but what about you? Are you going to be part of whatever he's doing? Are you going to do something else? What about you?
Well, I'm looking at a couple different things. I have been working with a gentleman named Al Corlin. He runs a company and a radio show called the Corlin Economics Report, mostly focused on gold and silver mining stocks. So I'm getting more and more active in his business. And so I'm not entirely sure what the new year holds for me, but that's what I'm doing at the moment.
So what about the rest of the congressional staff? You know, a lot of the guys that we've known for years, are they going with him in any way? Are they all heading in different directions, going with somebody else? What?
Well, they are staying with him. The great thing about retirement for Ron, and I just say retirement from Congress, not retirement from activism, is that he's no longer, doesn't have to come to D.C. for ridiculous votes. He doesn't have to worry about FEC rules and all these other things. So he's going to continue to run his 501c4 organization and also his foundation down in Texas, which is going to be based more on, or he's going to, excuse me, he's going to focus more on foreign policy.
Okay, which foundation? You mean C4L?
Well, C4L is his C4 advocacy organization.
Okay, is he going to be in charge of that now?
He will still be president of that, and that will be sort of the focal point of his campus outreach.
Okay, now this is, I mean, this has been my, you know me, I mean, we've known each other for a long time, and you know my spiel. I always kept arm's length from all this political inside, ouch, quit it crap. You know, I'm more about the cultural thing. And when the day before, your speech that you gave, I think it was San Francisco this last weekend, on how the focus is on a cultural revolution, on a freeing of the minds, how this is going to make rapid and forever changes very quickly in what you're doing, the future of the staff, and Dr. Paul, unfettered from this, you know, congressional thing, which means you're more powerful. When we come back, we're going to talk about that with Jeff Dice.
Do you feel like there's nothing you can do about the inexorable?
Okay. We got 4 minutes. We come back at 33 after, and then we'll get back into it, and that's where I want to go. So, yeah. And we are broadcasting just in the break, just FYI. You know, it's live web streaming video, so I just, you know, so you don't say anything you don't want said. All right. Now, so what you can tell me, you know, how is his future looking for what issue that he's going to emphasize? I mean, we're kind of, you know, I mean, in the Fed, okay, we get it. And, you know, yeah, I just assume ignore them, so I don't care. But the this secede thing, I see that as a lynch for a whole bunch of other stuff. Is that something he's going to focus on?
Well, it's you know, it came up, and obviously, you know, where we stand on that. But I think he's going to focus on war and the Fed, to tell you the truth. And really, they're twins. You know, they're two sides of the same coin, because the Fed makes wars possible, because God knows we don't bring in enough taxes to actually pay for it.
Okay, I got to tell you this story in the break real quick. We had Grandparents Day for my oldest grandchild, 3 years old. It's a Christian daycare, couple days a week in the morning for 4 hours or something. They go there and be whatever. We go there for Grandparents Day. I knew this. I had seen the itinerary, and I wanted to see this firsthand. We go there, Grandparents Day, you have like a dozen kids, you got like 20-something, you know, grandparents sitting, you know, in the little seats, and they're on the rug doing their whatever. And then all of a sudden, it's Pledge of Allegiance. Three-year-old kids, I pledge allegiance, you know, as best they mumble and whatever, you know. I pledge allegiance. But right when they started that, you know, which I already got issue with, right when they started that, all of a sudden, all the grandparents, except Donna and I, as we're videotaping and so on, boom, they went to their, clicked their heels and Sieg Heil Pledge of Allegiance. And I'm going, wow, that was an eye-opener for me. How you get to this, you know, who the last one sitting down is going to hell or something. And they, how you do that is you start at 3 years old getting them Pledge of Allegiance. So I'm going, so you start this secede movement kind of thing, or the nullification of the states, and all. It's all based on this mindset of us versus them, you know, allegiance to this flag, you know, blah, blah, blah. So I'm going, okay, if Dr. Paul, and it may take off without, you know, he can focus on the war and the Fed, you know, I understand how they're connected, and that's definitely shouldn't, you know, be lost on anybody. But this this secede thing and this pledging thing and this nationalistic, you know, patriotic nationalism kind of Nazi crap, you know, I can see that as a linchpin. If you pull that out or you start attacking, just doing like signs that we would do here, the kind of things that we do is like still pledging. I mean, you're just something simple that just get the question out there. That may be a fundamental thing that we can do.
Well, I hope some of those grandparents were old enough to remember when it was these United States instead of the United States, right? But
all that's lost on them. All that's totally lost, you know. But we've done, you know, there's so many stories we've done. Lot, you know, we do the real history and pamphlets and pass it out to Boy Scout troops at city council meetings, you know, because they're giving crap to some city councilman that refuses to do the pledge while we're at war and all that kind of stuff. They bring in the Boy Scouts, so we start educating them. You know, so it's when they find out where it came from and all that kind of stuff, they're like, damn it, man, we didn't want you to bring that up, you know. So I'm, you know, we'll see what happens. Okay,
well, again, it's culture, though. It's culture. It's schools and kids and changing people's hearts and minds. And trying to win elections doesn't work.
You know, I want to talk about that when we come back. That was the one thing about your presentation I found interesting. All right, here we go.
Zero.
Help get LRN.FM into more ears. Visit promote.lrn.fm for a free bumper sticker, flyers, banners, graphics, and more. Promote.lrn.fm.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
It's the same old story, same old song and dance, my friend. It's the same old story,
same old song and dance. Same. I tell you what's different, though, is that there has been an entire shift in American politics. You know, it's American culture. And you hear us on the show, we just keep screaming this. It has, you know, blah, blah, blah. I don't trust the election machines to begin with. You know, I run for Secretary of State twice, county recorder, and I've got signs, you're still voting. I mean, you know, and then they go, Ernie, how'd you get so many votes? Because I told people not vote. Senior editor, Pal Gamble, running against Jeff. No, that was Mark Victor ran against Flake and Carmona, and he did pretty good, over 100,000 votes. So they're like, cool, man. I just, you know, came in at the end, said, yo, what's up? Freedom's the answer. What's the question? Pal Gamble, senior editor, ran against Kyrsten Sinema and Vernon Parker here. So, you know, Kyrsten Sinema, you got a good little socialist there. But, you know, he came in 6.33% of the vote, and I think it even went up, you know, maybe almost 7% now. And all he did was tell people to not vote. He goes, you're still voting? You know, why? And he gave good reasoning for it and so on, got the highest percentage. And whenever the libertarians or people of different groups, they want to, oh, wow, how did that happen? What did you do? Come tell our group what you did. I told people not vote. Never mind. We don't want you to come talk. Okay.
Well, it's interesting to me that Mark Victor got, I think, roughly three times as many votes statewide as Gary Johnson in Arizona.
Yeah.
It's astonishing if you think about it.
Well, that's one thing to bring. You know, I don't put a lot of we had an election night party and all the candidates in the party and everybody's out here and we're just, you know, chilling. Now, of course, we put up a big screen with a digital projector and they could just go between all of the different news services and, you know, keep refreshing like rats, you know, getting their little food pellet, you know. They're going, ooh, click, click, refresh, refresh, refresh. And I'm like, look at you guys. I mean, do you really think that they're accurately portraying whatever? I mean, heck, it's going to be weeks before they ever get the totals anyway. It started off, you know, the first 24 hours, it was like 70,000 votes that Mark got. It's over 30, 40,000 more, you know, a week later. I mean, it's just, you know, I thought we were supposed to do all this electronic stuff to be fast. How much faith do you have in the actual physical tabulation of the ballot?
Not much. I mean, clearly every state's different, but you know, governments are notorious liars, so I don't, you know, I think there's probably enough media and alternative media that'd be pretty hard to really steal elections that aren't close, but, you know,
they got a lot of ways
to never know.
I know, it's called the Tampa RNC convention. I mean, they just make it up as they go. So really, your job there, Chief of Staff, is you daily deal with Dr. Paul, and you go, you know, that's another thing. Somebody asked me, they go, why do you guys call him Dr. Paul instead of Congressman? Because we don't want to insult him.
Well, you know, he's a down-to-earth guy, so frankly, we just call him Ron.
You know?
No errors on his end.
There you go. Now this is, as you're dealing, I just, out of respect, I just call him Dr. Paul, but as you deal with Dr. Paul, you know, is it daily a mission is the same? Is it, you know, kind of the bills and issues come and go, but there's some common theme. What is it?
Well, the theme is education, and look at the platform he's built for himself. I mean, it's kind of disgusting in one way that it takes electoral politics and a seat in Congress or a stand on a presidential debate stage to do so. But, you know, nonetheless, it's one way. You know, electoral politics is one way to have a platform, and I think he's done it to huge effect.
Well, it's what's his plan, though? I mean, you know, he has the next year. He's very encouraged. You know, as am I. I see. You know, we have to go through a lot more pain before we can get to the optimistic rebuilding of on the foundation of leave me aloneism. And I'm going, okay. So I can see how this can change, but we got a lot to change, and it's going to get a lot worse first. How bad do you think it's going to get? What are you preparing for?
Well, maybe it needs to get that bad for Americans to stop believing things that aren't true. In other words, as long as the government can sort of provide roads and bridges and schools and especially Social Security and Medicare with deficit dollars that are not totally worthless due to hyperinflation, you know, maybe the American public continues to believe that government is benign despite all evidence to the contrary. But, you know, if you look at the former Soviet Union, for example, you know, sometimes states can collapse really quickly when they lose the public's trust because they can't provide the stuff that they say they exist to provide. You know, as libertarians, we already see that what the state claims to provide, A, it doesn't provide, and B, it makes worse. In other words, it doesn't provide any education, but it does worse than that. It actually ruins kids' minds. But that's still our viewpoint. The majority of the public doesn't hold that yet. So, you know, whether it's going to come slowly, like letting the air out of a balloon, or whether it's going to come quickly with some kind of world event that triggers a dollar run, a dollar sell-off, and hence a dollar collapse. You know, if I was smart enough to know that, I'd be shorting some stock or something, right?
Well, you're not, you know, thinking that it's going to be held off forever. It's kind of a timing thing. But, I mean, I would think that the Ron Paul's office and his supporters kind of, it's inevitable. I mean, it's not like, I go like this. I said, a wealthy friend of mine, I go, you know, inflation or deflation, you know, it's going to get hyper, or it's going to be a deflationary, you know, depression. I mean, you know, what do you, he goes, all you got to do is ask yourself one question. And I go, what's that? He goes, will the U.S. government stop spending? Okay, well, there's your answer.
Right.
So
right.
I'm going, okay. So, I mean, are they going to stop spending?
Well, we've already had the inflation because inflation's properly defined as an increase in the money supply.
Right.
So we just don't know how that inflation is going to ultimately manifest itself in a Weimar Germany situation or in a deflationary, you know, debt collapse. But either way, it's not pretty. But the bitch in all this, Ernie, is how does the average Joe, not a rich guy, how does the average Joe in America get himself out of the dollar? Because your house is sold in dollars, your bank account's in dollars, your little measly stock portfolio's in dollars, your crappy 401k is in dollars, unless you've got a lot of ability to hedge, you know, it's very tough.
Get dime cards. You know, the one thing that is starting to come up is this Bitcoin thing. Have you paid any attention to that?
Yeah, I have. It's intriguing, obviously, but you know, there's still nothing behind it. There's sort of no there. I mean, certainly, I'd be more comfortable with some form of e-gold or e-silver. But you know, God bless anybody who's using Bitcoin. And I think it's, you know, the market's going to come up with a million things, and
right.
whether that's a black market or a legal market is the only question.
You know what happened? Peter Schiff has a. Oh, it's like a Visa that's backed by grams of gold or whatever,
yep.
your
yep.
transaction and that. But he won't let anyone that's a U.S. citizen partake.
It's not available to citizens. And, you know, U.S. expats are finding that all around the world. They can't get bank accounts. And you know, the U.S. passport used to be, a prized possession and
now it's a
goal. Now it's an albatross. And that's happened awfully fast in just about 10 or 20 years.
Oh, what do you know about this Honduras thing? You know, they've given off some free land, say, go be free.
Well, now that it's December in Northern Virginia, you know, any place that's got palm trees and sunshine and, you know, hey.
I'm looking, you know, I'm like, all right, you know, if I had to pick a place, there's a lot of places to, I mean, when you have anywhere else around the world, you have large investors, you know, moving to China. And so, I mean, what does that tell you? I mean, damn, you know, so this indoctrination of, you know, America, you know, we're, I call them MKers, you know, Americans. Yeah. You know, America, we're going to go kick ass America. And we had, oh, I tell you. We had Dennis Kucinich on a couple of times in the last few weeks. He has a big plan for 2013, too. His big deal, of course, I think is going to be, you know, really hammering on this peace thing. Is there going to be any overlap between Dr. Paul and Dennis Kucinich, you think?
Absolutely. He's got a new organization. He's already formed it. Just in our office last week, they talk all the time. And Ron's foundation is called FREE, is going to work with Kucinich, absolutely.
Okay, well, what's FREE stand for?
Foundation for Rational Economics Education.
Oh. See, yeah, we're going to have plenty to do in 2013. You know, when we come back, I want to find out how much is that going to be doing politics, candidate running, endorsements inside the Republican Party, and how much outside. I'm an outside guy. We know you're out there. We can feel you now. We know that you're afraid. You're afraid of us. You're afraid of change. We don't know the future. We aren't here to tell you how this is going to end. We're here to tell you how it's going to begin. We're going back to editing the next edition of Freedom's Phoenix Digital Magazine now, where we are telling the people what you don't want them to know. We're showing them a world without you, a world without rules and controls, without borders or boundaries, a world where anything is possible. Where we go from there is a choice we leave to you. Subscribe at freedomsphoenixeasy.com. That's freedoms with an S, phoenixeasy.com.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Wow! 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 I feel good. I knew that I wouldn't. I feel good. I knew that I wouldn't.
So good! So good. Yeah, we got Jeff Deist on the line from Washington, D.C. You want to know what's really going on, what's up, and what's happening? You know, we get to talk to Jeff. A treat for all of us. Thank you for coming on. You know, the one thing that I'm really looking forward to, I know you got to go here in a little bit. As soon as you get your call, you just let us know and we'll let you go. But my big thing is that, you know, what do we do for 13? I got, you know, a lot of plans. As always, I'm a year or two ahead of schedule doing whatever. We're setting ourselves up. But it always has a common theme, which I think that Dr. Paul has definitely represented, is just this, you know, mind-freeing thing. But I'm going, all right. So how much are you guys going to be focusing on, C4L, on electoral politics and the endorsements of candidates and the standard or saving the GOP or taking over state parties? No, I mean, is that really going to be the focus to further your ends, or is there something else going on?
No, it's not. It's certainly not going to be Ron Paul's focus. His focus is going to be on changing hearts and minds. I mean, now that he's going to be away from Washington, you know, he'll be far less involved in electoral politics other than the occasional endorsement of a pro-liberty candidate, you know. But I think he's very relieved to be away from all that and free to do what he wants to do. I mean, the electoral politics, you know, even if we got 5 or 10 hardcore Ron Pauls in Congress and in the Senate tomorrow, you know, is it too late for the dollar? Is it too late, yep, given the fact that all so many of the other members of those bodies are terrible. So no, he's not going to be focused on that. C4L has a slightly different mission. You know, he's president of that, but I think he'll be working in ways that are much more in line with what you do, which is culture, hearts and minds.
Well, you know, what's the vehicle he's going to use? Is C4L just kind of, you know, he's at arm's length? It's over there. He's busy something else. I mean, what's his primary core daily job, organizational working with kind of thing? What's he going to be doing?
Well, I mean, you know, his core vehicle will be public speaking, and he'll sort of do that under his own auspices. But I think you'll also see him on a lot of college campuses, and that'll be working with YAL. I think you'll see him probably in Europe and South America, just some trips he hasn't been able to take the last couple of years because he's been too busy. And I think you'll see him writing books, and I think you'll see him producing his own video content in some form of Ron Paul TV, for lack of a better description.
You know,
whether that's sort of a Glenn Beck subscription online format or whether that's through an actual cable network, we're still working on.
Okay, so you're going to be involved with him and, you know, continuously in kind of, you know, different areas of expertise. You're kind of out there, a tentacle of, an arm of, an association with. I mean, you see your future over the next year or two still associated with Dr. Paul?
Well, always as a friend. You know, I'm going to go make a living elsewhere and otherwise, but I'll certainly be in contact with him.
Okay, well, I'm just, you know, it's good to see, you know, the right people involved. I'll tell you, now that the election's over, I mean, some of the people involved in the campaign, a lot of names people don't even know, man, I could not get far enough away from. I mean, it was way too much GOP politic and kind of, I just know, hell no. So I was glad to just be kind of separate from that. And it's, so is that going to be cleaned up quite a bit, you think, to where the philosophical and the goals are going to kind of be more in line with what Dr. Paul wants to do?
Absolutely. Ron's the boss, and he's going to do what he wants to do. You won't see, you know, you just won't have that political layer where you've got FEC rules, you know, where you've got, you have to worry about state parties, you know, when you run for president or national office. So he's going to be a lot freer.
Yeah, I stayed away from, you know, I haven't even, God, all this time, you'd think that I'd be due a Ron Paul interview one of these days, you know, but I never really made the attempt. Because, ew, what are we going to talk about? How much I hate politics? So
let's make that happen in the next few weeks.
Yeah, we'll get it done. I want to be done. You know, maybe after when he gets ready to get, so whatever is convenient for him, what's best for y'all. But I'd love to have a candid, long conversation of, you know, where we can put the kind of things that we do in the effort towards a real ass whipping. And inside their machine, I couldn't, hell no, I'm not wasting my time. But we do things like, you know, I got Mark Victor to run for that U.S. Senate thing. He got the bug, man. He sees the power of now just making fun of these guys and how without they are. He's like, Ernie, he used to make fun of me all the time doing this. And once he got a dose of this, he's like, wow, it's like barrel fish, man. Yes, it is.
Well, you know, he's got quite a lot of name ID, and Ron loves him, and hopefully we're going to get those two together in the next, you know, flying out to Houston in the next couple months to visit with Ron and sort of plot his future. You know, I got to run. I got to let you guys go, but I just want to say happy Thanksgiving to you and Donna.
Thank you, Jeff.
Hope all your kids and grandkids are good.
Everything is really great, and I feel a lot better that you guys are taking this mission on to, you know, free the minds, because that's the only salvation, I believe. You know, a fellow freedom fighter, Jeff Dice, now going in the private sector. Go whip butt, man. Thanks for coming on.
And Donna's going to sell me my hideaway in Tucson, right?
Absolutely. She's okay. All over it. Gary got you covered.
Thanks, guys.
All right, man. Bye.
Bye.
Yeah, this is, in fact, Donna had done some searching for him. He was thinking of moving to Tucson before, you know, that he, you know, was all interested in, you know, just going out and making more money, you know, on when he left Dr. Paul's campaign, he had a child and he just needed more money. So he goes, well, I'll go out instead of, you know, selling myself or prostituting to the special interest or being on, well, I'll actually go into free market and do it the way I'm supposed to. And then he came back. I was so glad to hear that he came back, too, because, you know, of all the people that I've dealt with in Washington, that one, you can trust, you know, that get things done, that, you know, return a call, you know, or something when we're doing planning, whatever, Jeff took care of business. So, but I never mentioned his name to anyone because I didn't want anyone to know, hey, here's the guy that really gets things done, you know, so then, of course, he'd get the crap bugged out of him. Well, it's, you know, we find out a lot of stuff. You know, are you looking? Hey, see, he's already ready to hire you, Donna. Are you happy about that?
Absolutely.
Yeah, we'll go get him taken care of. And we'll give him the extra what for. And he wants to go to Tucson for some reason. He always liked Tucson for some reason. And Tucson's nice. You know, it's a nice place, too. But it's totally different. You know, Tucson is more like the xeriscaping desert, incorporate the homes into a desert setting, where here it's all irrigation and trees and green.
They're at the end of the water trail, so it's harder for them to just use water like we do.
Oh, okay. Well, that might have something to do with it. But, you know, and there they have a lot of people. They save their rainwater. You know, it comes off there, and they save the rainwater, and they can, you know, have enough water for them to last them year-round. You know, it's legal here, but not in Colorado. The government owns the rain. I'm just like, wow, that is just amazing to me. Well, this gives me, you know, a little bit of hope. Now, you got a little bit behind the scenes, kind of a little news breaking thing going on here that I've been kind of holding off. And yes, you know, it's time for Dr. Paul to come on the show, but I couldn't. I didn't want to. There was no way that I mean, what am I going to do? Ron, why are you messing with these guys? Why are you give a crap? Why are you going to? And I'm all for running all the way to the end. I'm for not pulling out. I'm for being in that, you know, I was like, go through the entire convention, never pull, be a butthead, you know, screw them, you know. But it's just an example of a method that we can give a finger to the man. That's all I cared about. And how many minds can you free? But now he has a big, giant group of people that have already taken over a lot of the Republican Party. And what's the Republican Party going to do? They're going to come after it like you wouldn't believe, in whatever creative way that they think they can get away with. But what happens when you go, oh, not there anymore. We're over here with the youth generation next. We're freeing the three-year-olds from Pledging of Allegiance.
We'll have a lot more adults in a few years sitting down instead of saluting the flag, I think.
Yeah, wow, was that, wow. Didn't that bother you a little
bit?
Sure,
it bothers me from maybe a different reason than you. As a Christian, I just think it's absurd to see these Christians. It's first in line to stand up to salute a flag. It's kind of blasphemous, in my opinion.
What it represents to me is the mindset behind it, this blind groupthink thing. They don't even understand. And anything that it's supposed to represent, it doesn't now anyway. You know, I hope you can see the power of inspiration, the power of just influence with an entire new generation. It is going to get bad. Dr. Paul's not going anywhere. He's going to be speaking to a lot of people going on campuses. Jeff is going to be doing his thing, working in the private sector and helping. You know, we'll get together behind it. I know Mark is going to be meeting. A lot of people didn't know that. You know, Jeff spilled the beans on that one. Is that Mark Victor is going to be meeting with Ron Paul. He may be running as a Republican here in Arizona for freedom. What will happen then? What role will we play? There's plenty coming.